Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're on Instagram, make sure you follow us at TSN1050. If you're not, sign up and follow us, even if it's the only account that you follow. Because if you're a big fan of the show, you've got to know what's going on behind the scenes. On Instagram, at TSN1050.
This is Overdrive on TSN1050.
Scott MacArthur for Brian Hayes, who is away this week, which should have been our first tip that something big was going to go down, because when Hazy goes away or calls in sick, stuff happens. Gord Miller is here as well. And joining us in studio from the Toronto Star, TSN 1050 contributor, Bruce Arthur is here. But 1,000 different directions to go with this Kawhi acquisition. DeMar DeRozan, a San Antonio Spur. Okay. So here's the question, Bruce, that I'm going to assume you can't necessarily answer yet for a variety of reasons, but should be the question that concerns us most right now, which is,
yeah,
are the Toronto Raptors a better basketball team right now than they were at 5 o'clock Eastern time yesterday?
Well, theoretically they're way better, except Kawhi Leonard hasn't passed a physical yet. Kawhi Leonard hasn't reported yet. And neither of these are things that we can say are definitely going to happen. Because, like, last night before this happened, I had two different NBA people, one of whom is kind of really knows what Kawhi was thinking or had a pretty good idea, said he doesn't want to come here. There was very few teams that Kawhi Leonard was willing to kind of extend himself with. And Toronto wasn't one of them. We don't know if he's going to play for the Raptors. If Kawhi Leonard comes to the Raptors and plays as the engaged, healthy Kawhi Leonard we've seen in the 2 years before last season, we're talking about a guy who's one of the three best basketball players on earth. A two-time defensive player of the year who can give you an efficient 25 points a game and play an all-around floor game. He's great. Capital G, great. But we don't know if he's going to do that or be that. And I don't think the Raptors do either.
So think about this, Bruce. Go back to a couple of years ago, or I guess last year, the deal between Boston and Cleveland, right? The Kyrie Irving, Isaiah Thomas deal, where all of a sudden Isaiah Thomas underwent a physical because he had a bad hip.
Yeah.
Cleveland knew about it, but it was worse than they thought.
Yeah.
And they went back and asked for more. Just say, I mean, what happens if Kawhi Leonard comes to Toronto and fails his physical?
Well, I mean, this is already a messy thing, Gord. Like, the DeMar DeRozan camp is upset, really upset, beyond just I've been traded from the team I wanted to spend my career with upset, because they seem to believe that Masai Ujiri at Summer League a couple weeks ago went to DeMar DeRozan and said, you will not be traded. I don't know if that happened or not. I find it incredible if it did, because Masai Ujiri has been trying to trade DeMar DeRozan on and off for 2 years. Like, this is not a new thing. There have been other teams he's engaged with other than San Antonio in the last 2 or 3 weeks.
Right.
Like, so if this deal were to fall apart because of a physical, because let's say Kawhi Leonard's thigh is made of stone now and he can't move, I don't think that's the case, because he was planning reportedly
to
be in the USA basketball camp. But if this deal did fall apart, it's a huge mess. It's a huge mess anyway. Because let's say that Kawhi comes, passes his physical, we still don't know who he's going to be here, both on or off the court. And DeMar DeRozan seems to believe he has not just been traded, but been betrayed by the organization he loved and supported like no other star player in franchise history.
I just wonder if that conversation between Masai and DeMar was one of those things where Masai said something and DeMar interpreted it a way that Masai didn't intend it to be. And I mean, who the heck knows, Bruce? Because unless somebody had a recorder in there, you don't know exactly what was said and what was heard.
People at Summer League saw Masai seek out DeMar. So this is not DeMar seeking out Masai. It's Masai seeking out DeMar and talking to him. What he said might be between those two. And I think that is the most likely explanation, is that something was lost in translation. Because I just can't believe Masai Ujiri would say that. I've had other teams in the league tell me that they were engaged in trade talks for DeMar DeRozan in the last month. So this has all been on the table.
GMs that I know never give players assurances you won't be traded. I mean, what if the Warriors called up and said, we'll give you Klay Thompson for DeMar DeRozan?
Yeah.
I mean, not it would happen, But, I mean, you can't say to a player, you'll never be traded.
It's impossible. And the other thing that happened is that one of the reasons that DeMar's gone and Dwayne Casey's gone is the way they lost to Cleveland in the playoffs absolutely shattered any remaining illusion in the management ranks of the Toronto Raptors that this team could still do it with its current core. Like, he lost faith. Masai Ujiri lost faith in the core of DeRozan, Lowry, Casey, and the two who underperformed the worst in that series, you'll notice, are gone.
Well, he bought them a year with the culture reset, mm-hmm. right? And then he got what he got, and he made the determination off of that.
He gave them a chance.
Yeah. But Bruce, it wasn't just the loss to Cleveland. It was 2 years ago in the first round. Mm-hmm.
The loss to Cleveland was the final blow, right? Because they went into that series with home court advantage, 59-win team, and a vulnerable Cleveland team. They went into previous series with Cleveland going, we kind of hope we can maybe do something. The organization believed they could win that series. That was the best team they could put together, and they choked. And I don't use that word very often. In game one, this team choked.
Right.
But DeMar DeRozan was a huge part of that.
And not for the first time. And I really like DeMar DeRozan, and I think he's been great for the city, and I think he's been great for the basketball team.
Awesome.
But this wasn't the first time he face-planted in the playoffs.
Yep. No,
my point, Bruce, is I don't think they move him because mm-hmm. he was bad this yeah. year in the playoffs. Mm. I think they move him because there's a track record here now of underperforming at key times in the playoffs.
You could still talk yourself into it. Like, they went in thinking they could beat Cleveland, and they didn't get. Like, Cleveland went 7-10 against every other team in the playoffs. Cleveland went 7 against Indiana, and they had a hell of a time with Boston, and the Raptors got swept. And Masai Ujiri went after Dwayne Casey after game 3, and all the fractures that existed on this team were hammered apart. And that's why these guys are gone. That's why Dwayne Casey got fired and then was named Coach of the Year, because that was the final straw. Now, let's say something about DeMar DeRozan for a second. One of the best people I've ever covered, yeah. one of the best athletes in terms of believing in this city that we've ever had in Toronto, an incredible ambassador, a guy who got us.
And we got him.
And I remember he was on, what was he on, TNT, and Charles Barkley said, what's the best thing about Toronto? He said, the diversity of this city. Like, he lived in this city, and he understood it, and he repped it, and it was awesome. He just wasn't a great enough player. And Kawhi Leonard, if he's healthy and engaged, is.
Well, and I remember, Bruce, I think you said it to me off air for sure. You certainly said it on air when we were visiting a couple of months ago, that you had talked to people at ESPN who had been told by their company, by their mm-hmm. higher-ups, make sure you have your passport.
Yep.
Because we could be headed north of the border for the NBA Finals.
Which they had never done before.
So there was yep. that. Now, DeMar the person, we can add to that, advocating for very important causes,
yep.
sharing about his mental health challenges that he's faced. DeMar the player,
mm-hmm.
defensively...
Fatally flawed. Although, you know what? He could go to San Antonio and Greg Popovich could make him a much better player. Right. Absolutely.
Well, and then
because one of the reasons that Dwayne Casey got fired was that there was a persistent frustration with Casey's a great guy. Dwayne's a wonderful human being. He doesn't like confrontation, and he never pushed DeMar hard enough in the eyes of management to improve his defense. And so when DeMar was still getting hidden in the second round against Cleveland defensively, it was a sore point that had festered that came back.
Well, what did Nick Nurse say a couple of weeks ago? Mm-hmm. We're going to stick DeMar on some of the better players in this league.
He's going to be our lead defender.
Well, and who has more credibility than Greg Popovich to challenge a player? Like, he could make DeMar DeRozan a better player, absolutely. But in Toronto, it never happened.
That wasn't his first coach. Dwayne Casey wasn't DeMar DeRozan's first coach in the NBA.
But the last 7 years he was. And that's when you look at DeMar's greatest attribute, and I found this with a lot of athletes, their greatest attribute can be their greatest detriment. DeMar's stubborn, right? He's iconoclastic. He does things his way. He didn't go to the big-time basketball high school in L.A. He went to a different high school and wanted to beat them on his own. That's always been his kind of attitude. But in Toronto, that stubbornness, he grew offensively. He became a much better player offensively. The stubbornness never and the will never extended to the defensive end. And so as a player, he's inefficient for a big-time scorer. And defensively, he's not great. Kawhi Leonard is the opposite of both those things. He's an efficient, high-end scorer who is one of the few people on this planet who you can say, go get LeBron James and you can sleep at night. He's that good. Like, people don't maybe understand because he was gone last year
right.
and he's been playing in the Western Conference. this guy on defense is a monster, and he'll give you 25 a night.
And he won the NBA Finals MVP.
Yeah.
He scored, but he was also brilliant at both ends of the court. He was.
You can stick him on Kevin Durant. And you can't stick anyone on Kevin Durant.
And he was 22 or 23.
Now, if you let yourself imagine what this Raptors team could be if everything works out, and we're a long way from that, they didn't give up OG Anunoby. They didn't give up Pascal Siakam. They have now three athletic long wings who can switch anything, which is a part of how Houston gave Golden State so many troubles in the playoffs. Plus, they kept DeLon Wright. Plus, they have two more point guards besides DeLon Wright and Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet. Their only weakness is at the traditional big position, and that's, of all the weaknesses you can have, that's the one you want. This team's deep. This team's athletic. Has Danny Green's another 40% three-point shooter you can add to this team. This team could be really, really good. This team could make an NBA Finals. But you have to get Kawhi Leonard in the door, and you have to keep him for a year.
So what do we think? Because I think that's the key word. What do we think we understand about this guy? Ramona Shelburne has done a terrific long-form piece on everything that went wrong in San Antonio last year. And Bruce, I mean, we followed this story over the course of the season to some degree. She laid it out tremendously. And I still, to my own reading, can't assign proper blame. Because there is blame to go around, I would be sure. But, and you know how we do this in sports radio. We assign themes and draw comparisons. Right. They're not even the best NBA team in their own state anymore. I get that. It's the Houston Rockets.
Yep.
But if you go back over the last 2.5 decades, Greg Popovich, San Antonio Spurs, they would be the closest comparable to the New England Patriots in the NFL. And isn't it funny that we started to hear of some friction between Brady and Belichick? Didn't affect on-field performance. But now, for all of this, and obviously it gets out because it's too obvious. Kawhi's not there.
Yep.
Why isn't Kawhi there? What's going on with this quad injury? What is it? What is it not? Is he bailing on the team? Teammates are speaking out. They're a little cryptic. All this stuff. I mean, it's impossible. This is the thing. We know we're getting, coming to Toronto, one of the best players in the NBA if he plays.
If he plays.
But we have absolutely no the hell idea what's going through his mind, where his head is at.
Yeah.
Like, it's all the, and what do we fear the most in life? The unknown. We can't actually make a prognosis on this deal right now because we have no idea what's happening.
Players run the NBA. And one of the byproducts of that is that you have to determine what a player wants. Do you think LeBron James wanted to go to L.A. so he could play with Rajon Rondo and Lance Stephenson and JaVale McGee and the kids who haven't won there? No. He decided he wanted to go to the Lakers because he wanted to live in Los Angeles. He wanted to have a post-career in film, and he thinks he can attract enough players to L.A. to do stuff there. Kevin Durant didn't want to be a leading guy in Oklahoma City. He wanted to play with Golden State, but people in Golden State still are not 100% sure what he wants going forward. You have to determine what guys want. So if Kawhi Leonard was willing to go to L.A., either L.A. team, he's a California guy, wants to live in L.A., a big market, okay. That is very explicable. I was told that he had also already been planning his free agency a year from now and talked to other stars around the league about potentially teaming up, and that one of the cities they may have mentioned was Brooklyn. So that's another big market. They're going to have tons of cap space next year. Okay, that makes sense. But he was also willing to re-sign in Philadelphia, which is a decent-sized market, but not a crazy market. Has two superstars in cold winters. So that's what we know about his criteria, as far as we know. But I don't know how much he knows about Toronto. I don't know how much he knows about Masai Ujiri. I don't know how much he knows about this roster, because he sat out last year during the year where the Raptors were actually really good. And I don't know if he watched a single NBA game. None of us know. Masai Ujiri knew that Kawhi Leonard didn't want to come, and he made the trade anyway. And the reason, I think, is this. Think about everything Masai's done with the Raptors. Has been based on one thing. Make this team matter. Make it a player. Make it relevant in the league, because being in the league is like being in college football. You got to recruit. You got to present an attractive place for people to play. A city, a situation, a culture, a team, an organization, all those things. Everything he's done has led to the moment where he could get assets and spend them on a superstar. And he just happens to have traded for a superstar who does not want to come here. So now the challenge for Masai Ujiri is everything he's ever said about the city. We can win here. This is a great city. Someone's going to discover it. He told me that last year. Someone's going to be the first guy to really get it, a true superstar who's going to really get it here. He now has a year to convince this guy to come and eventually maybe stay and maybe take $50 million more guaranteed U.S. than he can get anywhere else. And everything that Masai Ujiri has built about himself as an executive and this organization is going to go on the line and try to see if they can convince Kawhi Leonard to stay. It's a huge bet.
And it's amazing for a guy who has been so deliberate and so patient.
So patient.
For so long.
Yeah. Well, and I always compare Masai to, like, you know when seagulls are kind of just above the beach waiting for the moment where they see you drop food?
Is he a fry?
There's a lot like that, right? Like,
okay, food.
Yeah. He has tended towards inertia in terms of his players. Dwayne Casey stayed. Kyle Lowry got re-signed. DeMar DeRozan got re-signed. The most radical thing Masai's done probably in his tenure as Toronto Raptors president and general manager is re-signing Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka especially, because that was a commitment to something I don't think he fully believed in. But here we are a year later, and that flopped. And so you got to take your move when it's available. He can't go get LeBron or Kevin Durant or Steph Curry or James Harden or probably Anthony Davis or maybe even Giannis Antetokounmpo, but he could trade for Kawhi Leonard.
So is this Masai betting on himself?
Exactly.
Is this Masai?
Yeah.
And you know what? Like, I'm going to sit here and say this, Bruce. The guy has, you know, Vince McMahon used to use the line, and you love me for using the professional wrestling references, let's get gutter, but balls the size of grapefruits.
Mm-hmm.
If this is Masai's moment where he is staking his reputation, because you know how it's going to be,
mm-hmm.
59 wins, coach of the year, fired.
Yep.
Guy who chose this city, and we obsess over that when it comes to our basketball players
for
and,
good
our, base-
reason.
And
yep.
our baseball players.
Yep.
Guy who chose this city, guy who feels he's been lied to,
mm-hmm.
peddled out of town. All in the same offseason, about a month apart. If this crashes and burns, what's next?
I'll say this. Masai makes this move and the Dwayne Casey move because he feels he has enough political capital to get away with both. And I think he's right. I think he's wired up as high as you can go in this organization. I think they believe in him. He's good friends with the NBA commissioner. He's good friends with a lot of the important people in this league. Masai Ujiri can do what he wants. Now, that being said, it doesn't mean that he doesn't potentially risk something here, because he hadn't really done anything that wrong yet. He hadn't taken the big swing yet. That's right. Why, right? Like, the biggest swing was signing Serge Ibaka to a 3-year, $75 million deal, which today looks really, really bad. But you can live with that. This is trading away a beloved franchise icon, even one that a lot of fans acknowledge was flawed, and firing a coach of the year that people loved, even though they acknowledged he was flawed, and taking another step. He's going to have a rookie head coach who's going to try to put together something truly special. So much of the organization's history is riding on this moment. Like, everything about Raptors stars up until DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry was they leave. And it wasn't good enough. Those guys stayed, but it wasn't good enough. And now what have they set up? If it doesn't work, Masai Ujiri will be okay. They'll still have talent. They'll still have a future. They'll still be able to figure stuff out. It'll be a big swing and they miss. But he set up a situation where he's traded for the best player in franchise history, and in 1 year, that guy can tell the Raptors and Toronto, you're not where I want to be again.
So let me ask you this. Do you buy Sam Mitchell's theory that it's a one-year kick at it? If it doesn't work out, you press the reset button.
You absolutely can do that. Like, Kyle Lowry, at the end of this year, Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka have 1 year left on their deals. Those are deals you can move or you can just let play out, and you still will have your four best young players in Fred VanVleet, who's a leader and a future head coach in this league. And he's not going to be an all-star, but he's a really good guy to have in your program. DeLon Wright has a ton of talent. We'll see what he does with it. OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam also have a real upside to them. This team has accumulated a ton of assets, more assets than most teams in the league, but now he's starting to spend them. For all we know, now here's a kind of a far-out idea. Masai Ujiri still has enough assets to make another deal if he wanted to. You could structure a deal around Kyle Lowry and one of your better kids and go get another all-star.
Well, Sam Mitchell's argument in the first hour of the program is, I mean, this is going one of two ways. If they sit still, this is the prelude to the rebuild. If he goes and gets another superstar player somehow, some way, then we can believe that they're actually going for.
Maybe you go, like, Jimmy Butler's got a year left in Minnesota. That's an all-in move. Like, Jimmy Butler, he could leave too. But if you go, Jimmy Butler's a tough player, a good player. If you add him to this team and you trade Kyle Lowry, you let Fred VanVleet and DeLon Wright run the point guard position, you move one of your wings and get a better wing, you're a better team, and maybe you convince Kawhi to stay. But again, we're so early in this process. Masai Ujiri's on a plane back from Africa right now, and Kawhi Leonard hasn't said a thing other than, I don't want to play there. And he said that through proxies. Right. So we're so early in this. The possibilities are almost endless. It's really incredible.
So let's look at it for a second. It's always fun to do this with a trade. Look at the San Antonio perspective. And the reaction there is, that's it?
Mm-hmm.
Like in San Antonio, they're saying, that's all we got?
It tells you how dramatically the trade market had shrunk because Kawhi Leonard was controlling the process. He could tell teams, I'm not re-signing with you. Now, he was willing to do it in Philadelphia. In Philadelphia, or at least there was some signals, apparently, that he'd sent to Philadelphia. And Philly still wasn't willing to send in former number one pick Markelle Fultz or young stars Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid. The Lakers sound like they're willing to wait a year and get him in free agency, maybe.
And Boston said a lost interest.
Boston never seemed like they were that serious. They never put a real player into the deal, like a Jaylen Brown into the deal or a Tatum into the deal. So you're looking around the league, who are you going to trade with? So this is a distressed result for San Antonio. They got a first-round pick, which is exactly the kind of first-round pick that you throw into these kind of deals to say you got a first-round pick. And maybe San Antonio drafts another Tony Parker at 27. Good for them. Jakob Poeltl's a good young player. Good feet, good hands, good brain. But, he's the fifth best of the Toronto's young players, I think. And DeMar DeRozan is a flawed all-star with a big ticket, who Toronto had grown frustrated with as a player, not as a person, but as a player. So this isn't that much. That's the thing. From the Raptors' perspective, you're risking political capital because people love DeRozan, and you're risking a young player and a flyer first-round pick, but you're not risking that much.
We're getting asked on Twitter, Bruce, for clarification on what happens if Kawhi chooses not to report.
Then you fine him, and you can fine him up to the entirety of his salary if he holds up long enough.
He's your player now. Like,
he is under contract to the Toronto Raptors, and they have absolutely the ability to fine him. If he wants to sit out a year, he can lose all his money and sit out a year. That's very possible.
If the physical hasn't happened, is that a smart move with a guy who's been as injured as he is? Because couldn't he formulate some sort of argument, hey, I'm not healthy, and then you have to go through that medical
process. Guys trying to get out of the war by shooting off their toe or something?
Yeah, like, I mean...
You can waive a physical if you want. You don't have to make a deal contingent on a physical. Again, the fact that the president of the club is on a plane right now, as far as anybody knows. I don't know what time he took off, but I know he was leaving for Africa to come home. It kind of puts a lot of this in stasis, right? Like, it's hard to get accurate information on exactly what the options are here, but they can just say, we're not worried about a physical. They can say, you have to be in here in 48 hours to take a physical. They can extend the window to come in and take a physical. And then, at some point, they got to get Kawhi Leonard in a room and his people and his Uncle Dennis and all, and say, look, here's what we're offering. This team's good. It's young. It's a great city. It's a great fan base. We will make sure you love it here. Give it a chance. That's your sales pitch. And if you can get Kawhi Leonard to just buy in on that, that's where you start. But they're not there yet.
Yeah, well, and I'm thinking to myself just off the top of my head, who are some names he could tap into if he's in the immediate looking for some reaction? Like a Matt Bonner, isn't he doing San Antonio TV or whatever the heck Matt's up to? He could tell him a little bit about the city. I know it's going to be much, much more than that, Bruce.
How does Kawhi Leonard feel about Drake? His music, his everything. He's your global ambassador.
Yeah.
This is your, like, Drake's been making phone calls and kind of backdoor semi-tampering for some time and hanging out with NBA players in the summer and all that stuff. This is your time, Drake. This is it. Because you can now sell this player on this city or try. And I have no idea because none of us know this guy.
And Kawhi doesn't seem to be the guy who cares about running with celebrities and being out there.
Except that there's other reports that says he wants more endorsements and he wants more notoriety. Again,
he can become Captain Canada then if he wants on the basketball side.
Nobody really knows. All we know is that he doesn't seem to want to come here. But no one even, like, has Kawhi Leonard said it out loud yet? No, he hasn't.
Is this the riskiest deal you've seen in Toronto since Wendell Clark for Matt Sundin?
This might be riskier, right? Because, like, then you were trading a guy who'd been injured a fair bit. Like, he was, like, and you're trading for a really good young player.
You're trading, but you traded an icon.
But a guy you can keep under contract and develop and then see how it goes. This is, the clock started ticking today. 1 year. Let's see what happens. Like, here's what this is for Masai Ujiri. He's finally putting his money where his mouth is. He's always said, we can win here. He's always said, there's no reason that the Toronto Raptors have to be a laughingstock or a backwater or a joke in this league. We can be a real franchise and we can win here. And now he's betting on it. He's betting on himself, as Fred VanVleet and Scotty MacArthur would say. And he's betting on Toronto and the organization that he has built and on his team and on his players. And it's, again, it's a huge bet. But what were you going to do if you weren't going to do this? What better player could you take a flyer on? What better shot could you take?
So my question is, you could bring the team back that won 59 games.
Nah,
this year.
They couldn't. Like, honestly, they the way they lost those 7 days. That's all it was. 7 days. Yeah. They flopped. And that was the moment of truth, and they failed.
And Bruce, I said this to Scott yesterday. I've been around sweeps for a long time. People don't understand how soul-crushing they are.
Devastating.
Getting swept, it absolutely shakes your belief to its foundation.
And especially when you go in as the favorite, and you believe, and in the moment, and they had them. They should have had a 25-point lead in second quarter of game one, and they failed.
Is this viewed differently, Bruce, if they didn't vomit all over themselves against Washington a few years back? Because a narrative, okay, it was so nice and bleep you, Brooklyn, and all that. And we're in the playoffs, and it was disappointing to lose at home in the seventh game. But at least they were there after being irrelevant for so long, and Bosch had left.
Yeah.
Then the next year, kaput against the Wizards.
Well, not just that, Scotty, right? Like, the next year, they get into the conference final, but they are life and death against two really mediocre teams to get there. And that was a gentleman's sweep plus one.
Yeah.
Right, I remember sitting with Luis Scola on the bench before game six, and I said, you guys have won two games here, they've won three games there, what's going to happen tonight? And Luis said, I do not think they were taking us very seriously in game three and four. Tonight will be hard. And they lost by 30 points.
Yeah.
Like, and then the next year, they add Ibaka, and Kyle's coming back from his wrist injury, and they get swept again. Right? They've never really done that much. They've been one of the most successful programs in the Eastern Conference for 5 years. They finally won a best-of-seven playoff series for the first time in franchise history, four times now. But they watched how they lost that series and said, we cannot do this anymore.
Do you believe, Bruce, if this ends up resulting in a teardown, because Kawhi Leonard moves on, that in and of itself is a good idea based on the notion that the Leafs are the foolproof team in this city? But as you're seeing with a mediocre to sub-mediocre Blue Jays team, the butts aren't in the seats like they were in 2016. The Raptors, they're the only team in this city that plays directly up against, from a schedule and seasonal point of view, the Toronto Maple Leafs. Can you stomach 25 to 30 to 35 win seasons if there are two, three, or four of those required to get this team back to whatever the definition of the promised land is?
You got a few problems. Well, I actually think that the Raptors fan base is relatively resilient. I think they've really built something. I think it's easier to get 20,000 people into a building than it is to get 45,000 people into a building, especially for 41 games versus 81. I don't think they're as vulnerable as the Jays to that kind of downturn, because even in the bad years, you'd get 15,000 people in that building and they'd be screaming, because the show that comes in from the rest of the NBA is actually pretty good too. The problem with this team is it'd be hard to really tank. Because even if Kawhi walks and Danny Green walks and you trade Kyle Lowry, you still got some pretty good players.
The only thing I'd say, Bruce, is you can say that the 15,000 back in the day, but those tickets were priced very differently.
You might have to adjust your ticket strategy.
Because, you know, I went to some Raptor games this year, and they are now charging Leaf style prices.
Yes, they are.
I went to Oklahoma City. That was a $375 ticket.
Yeah.
Boom.
No, seriously, like
that was not between the baselines. That's a corner, now low, but a low corner seat.
Yeah.
For $375.
It's become a very expensive ticket. You'd have to adjust that. You would. If you were going to, because what they've been selling is 50 win seasons and hope.
And
that's
elite.
That's another reason.
And elite.
And that's one reason they couldn't run it back, is because They showed everyone who they were in that moment. And so now, again, if this guy comes and he plays, this team could be exceptional. We could see an NBA Finals in Toronto, full stop. There'll be a battle royale with Boston and Philly in the playoffs. But these guys, he's the best player in the Eastern Conference. The best player.
If he's healthy and engaged.
Yep, absolutely the best player in the Eastern Conference. But he's got to do that, and nobody knows.
Back to the cottage.
Amazing, huh?
There's not much that gets Bruce Arthur into the city in July and August. This gets Bruce Arthur into the city.
Very little. I think I came back for Kyle Lowry re-signing last year. And then, man, it's nice out there.
Yeah, gorgeous. Except the car. They might do something else.
Yeah, again, it's quite possible I'll be in the pool before sundown.
All right, on that note.
Good to know. Thanks for sharing that.
The proletariat will continue on with their work.
We'll just keep working.
There you go.
Bruce Bless Arthur, you guys. Thanks,
the
guys.
Toronto Star, TSN 1050, TSN contributor. We are all over the Kawhi Leonard to the Raptors trade today. A blockbuster. Leo Routin's at the top of the 6 o'clock hour. A little baseball with Steve Phillips in the 6 o'clock hour as well. It's Overdrive. Scott MacArthur for Brian Hayes. Gord Miller here as well. It's TSN 1050. Leo Routin's at the top of the hour. It's Overdrive on your Wednesday. Scott MacArthur, Gord Miller. And again, Kawhi Leonard is the top story today in this city. Raptors have acquired him. And as I said off the top of the show, and I'll repeat now, and I think he alluded to it on his own Twitter account today, when Brian Hayes took the week off. You see, very strategic.
Stuff was going to happen. He called it.
I did this last year. Hazy and I think, both took this week off last year because you can plan ahead in April and May, and you can go, you know what the worst week of the sports calendar is?
Baseball All-Star
Game. Baseball All-Star Week, because there are no baseball games, basketball off-season, hockey off-season, NFL training camps are still a couple of weeks away. Get away, put your feet up. Not going to be a lot to talk about. It's a struggle for content. But when I knew that I was working in Hazy, because Hazy called in sick on June 29th, and you say, well, why do you remember the date? June 29th, 2016, and it was, in some order, Hall for Larson, Stamkos announcing he was staying in Tampa Bay, and then Subban for Weber. All within like 45 minutes before Overdrive started, and Hayes is at home, and O is like, that guy is lying on his couch right now, just internally raging. Yeah.
It's been an amazing. I mean, there's this deal. I mean, we haven't talked about the baseball All-Star game last night. What, 11 home runs in the game last night?
Well, it was, if you like today's baseball, home runs and strikeouts, that's for you. Jay Happ with the All-Star game save.
Yeah, and then you had the Josh Hader story, right? So tweets, if you're not familiar with the story, during the All-Star game last night, tweets that he posted from his high school days 7 years ago or something.
Yeah, when he was 17.
Yeah.
He's 24
now. So, from high school, homophobic, racist, white supremacist tweets.
Well, let's just be honest. I think he doesn't use any slurs in these two tweets, so I feel comfortable saying it. But, quote, "I hate gay people," end quote, was one of his tweets.
Yeah.
Another was the fist bump emoji, white power, LOL.
Yeah.
Like, this is where we're at. And he is confronted by the media after the game. So what had happened when Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports, one of the best reporters in baseball, tweeted this out. After this all came out during the game.
Right.
Josh Hader's family, and they're a Maryland family, so it's not a long drive to D.C.
They're from just northeast of Washington.
They're there. They had Hader jerseys on. They switched out of their Hader jerseys when they were made aware of what was going on, and wore.
Well, I think the Nationals
generalized.
I think the Nationals actually brought them.
Yeah.
Generic attire,
because it hit. You know, and people in the park are going to find out, because they're on their phones too. They're on Twitter. They're on social media. And then he is confronted by a large pack of media after the game, and asked to explain. And I will give him credit for this much, which is he did not attempt to defend what he said.
Or deny it.
Where I stop short is, I was 17. I was dumb.
Yeah.
Look, we were all dumb at 17 years old, but that sort of language and those sorts of beliefs, you don't come out of the womb with those.
No, and whether it was 7 years ago or 17 years ago or 27 years ago, that wasn't appropriate then and it's not appropriate now. So Major League Baseball is in a conundrum here because you can't really discipline someone for something they did before they were a baseball player. He wasn't a Major League player when he did it. So they've put him in sensitivity training, which is probably the right move. The problem for him is going to be, for Josh Hader, and you know he brought it on himself, this becomes what I would call a first paragraph obituary situation. We're now, Josh Hader passed away, best known for, you know, his racist and homophobic tweets while he was a Major League, you know, they surfaced while he was a Major League Baseball player. Like, this becomes now, he's got to go back to the clubhouse and face teammates.
Well, Lorenzo Cain, his teammate with the right. Brewers, was at the game, played in the game, was asked about it afterward. He said, I'm just getting wind of this. Like, we had a quick conversation because I needed to know what was up. Because obviously, that is somebody, Lorenzo Cain, an African-American ball player, with whom he's going to have to clear the air.
And he's going to have to, I can guarantee you this, there won't be a day for the rest of Josh Hader's life that this isn't part of his thought process. He will think about it at some point, have to talk about it at some point. He'll notice people pointing at him at some point. It'll be part of it the rest of his life.
But
as it should be.
I remember the day after when I had the opportunity to lead off my show, the day after Kevin Pillar's incident with Jason Mott of the Atlanta Braves last year when he screamed F-A-G at Jason Mott after Mott had thrown inside at him. I said, look, you know, there's penance to be paid here if you're Kevin Pillar. You have to wear this. But I felt as well that there was an opportunity to learn from it. And I was not interested in a lot of the public stuff. Hey, you know, it's Pride Night down at the Dome, and I'm going to catch the ceremonial first pitch from a member of the LGBTQ community and then call it a night. There's an opportunity here to learn. And you know what? To Kevin Pillar's credit, he reached out into the community. He wasn't being trailed by 4, 5, or 6 TV cameras. It wasn't a publicity stunt. It came out later because he was asked about it and granted an interview. I think John Lott did a terrific piece in The Athletic about this. But he actually went and met with LGBTQ citizens and had them tell him their stories.
And how hurtful those words are.
And the reasons why those words are hurtful. Yeah. And so I think that there is an opportunity here for something good to come from it. At the same time, he does have to own it.
And he does. And it becomes what Barack Obama called the teachable moment, right? You hopefully move forward and you hopefully... But the fact is that whether he did it as a Major League Baseball player or not, he was still in high school when he did it, it reveals that this is still part of everyday life. And I'm, you know, when you talk to athletes of color and you talk to athletes who are minorities and you talk to athletes who are, you know, have a different sexual orientation than is the norm in sports, we don't understand how difficult that is. And I mentioned in the first hour, one of the reasons when you talk to African-American players about playing in Canada, one of the things they love about this place is its diversity. It's what DeMar DeRozan talked about. It's what Dwayne Casey talked about in his goodbye letter to Toronto after he got let go. And we pride ourselves on that. But don't fool yourselves. It exists here too.
No question.
It happens here too.
Our indigenous population in this country could.
And we fool ourselves to think that everyone is tolerant and everyone is, you know, and so it's an ongoing process. It's just really unfortunate to think that in the 21st century that there are still attitudes that are still so fear-driven and based on ignorance. And we have people in Canada who think that being a patriot means you have to hate other countries.
Oh, no question.
That's not patriotism. That's xenophobia.
Right.
You can be a patriot, you can love Canada, and still love other countries. I'm a patriot, I love this country. I love the Czech Republic, I love Sweden, I love Finland, I love Germany, I love England, France. I love going to all those places. That doesn't make me less of a patriot. But there's a lot of people in Canada who don't understand that.
And it's a big thing south of the border as well.
Well, that's, but imagine he comes back from pitching and his phone's blowing up because this thing is breaking during the All-Star game.
Yeah, like the thing is you I don't know if it's appropriate to try to put yourself in his shoes for the second, but he's out there. This is his first ever All-Star game.
It's essentially
in his backyard. His folks are there. His family's there. And the next thing you know, he's got 200 messages on his phone, and it's not about, hey, loved seeing you out there at Nationals Park. It was,
yeah,
dude.
So here's the message. And you know, you speak to broadcast students. I speak to students all the time in universities and colleges and high schools. Whatever you put on social media lives forever. Remember that. And one of the first things most employers do after you apply for a job is check your social media accounts. So if you think it's funny playing beer pong in your underwear and posting those pictures on Facebook, great. But your potential employer is going to see those too. And you are going to live with the consequences of what you say, and an ill-advised tweet, an ill-advised, you know, you get mad at, you know, you're at the grocery store and you get mad at the clerk and you say, you type something in your phone. Like, that stuff lives, and you will live with it, and you should.
Mm-hmm.
But you're leaving an electronic trail whenever you do it.
Right. Yeah. It's and you would think the younger generation would know that, but again, people oftentimes aren't thinking.
They're trying to impress someone.
Or whatever. Yeah. There's really no excuse for what he said. And
no, there isn't.
And you know what? Like, Gord...
Should they have done
you're
more?
A father, yes. and if your child or children are not 17 yet, they will be one day, or they have been if they are older than that.
No, my daughter's 13.
There you go. Your daughter is 13. Like, she'll be 17 one day. If she ever tweets that, her age ain't the excuse.
No. And do you think baseball should have done more, or do you think they're acting appropriately? What can you do?
I just think it's important that... it seems like he's aware of the problem, but that... he take the lead with help from crisis management people or whomever it is who can best direct him in these avenues. He take the lead and express the desire, and not make a big media thing about it, but express the desire to go into minority communities and meet people whose lives are different from his and whose daily experience, day in, day out, is different from his.
Right.
You know, I think that's the one thing that, well, let's be honest, that's the one thing we could all be better at. And in this case, I think for Josh Hader, he needs it. Steve Phillips at 6:30. We'll talk about this. Steve is also all over the Manny Machado situation.
What's going on?
Well, here's the thing, and we got to get out, but I will comment. The Baltimore Orioles, and this is the Angelos family who runs this team, they are absurdly weird about medicals for players that they may be acquiring, and there is a hang up here on at least one of the prospects' medicals in this deal with the Dodgers. So we'll get into all of that with Steve Phillips at 6:30. Leo Routens, as we continue to break down the breaking news, the big trade: Kawhi Leonard is a Raptor, DeMar DeRozan is a Spur. This is Overdrive. Scott MacArthur, Gord Miller, TSN 1050. Overdrive is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. Hour number 3 of Overdrive with Scott MacArthur, Gord Miller coming up. It's Steve Phillips at 6:30 on the snag that the Machado to Dodgers deal has hit thanks to the Baltimore Orioles. This is stunning. If you follow baseball at all closely,
you got it in for the Orioles, man.
And Leo Routens, who doesn't have it in for the Orioles.
We think.
And we probably won't ask. On the Kawhi DeMar Raptors San Antonio epic deal. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050.